702-365-9200 is the text line to reach us here. It's also our phone lines. And the key word of the day for our Summer of Fun giveaway is Visa, V-I-S-A. Text that in so you can qualify for the Wyoming Adventure 5 days at the Rocket M Ranch with money, fly fishing, horseback riding. It's awesome. It's right outside of Jackson Hole. You could qualify to win that or just take the $3,000 cash. It's easy. You got to qualify to win. And you can do that simply by texting the word Visa, V-I-S-A, to 702-365-9200. Eddie Borsilli joins us now, as he does on Wednesdays. He's the station director at Channel 156 on Sirius XM. It's awesome. Fight Nation just coming back from Las Vegas after the International Fight Week. And Eddie, we're happy to have you with us. And, you know, we're kind of going around the league, taking a look at every division and see which teams upgraded. And we started with the AFC East today, just taking a look at and starting with the Miami Dolphins, as they are also, again, on the Raiders schedule. This is a team that has a lot of question marks around it. And especially when you think about, did they make upgrades in the offseason?
That's the quarterback position with Tua Tagovailoa. I think, you know, you could sit here and say that he's maybe taking the next step in his contract time and he's going to come up and get the bag. But, you know, Tua to me is a player that's kind of hit or miss. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense to say that he can't get the job done. But with the skill position players that the Dolphins have and the amount of speed that they have, they could really, you know, keep up or beat anybody on any given Sunday. But it comes down to the left arm of Tua. Tua to me is a guy that, when he's on and he's accurate, the Dolphins are almost unstoppable. But to me, you know, if you get in his face, you let him move around the pocket, he's a guy that, you know, could be inaccurate sometimes and could lead to the downfall. I think the Dolphins, yeah, they missed some key pieces. Obviously, Christian Wilkins comes over, you know, to the Raiders from the Dolphins, and other pieces that they missed too. The Dolphins, you know, it sounds stupid to say it, but I think they go as far as the left arm of Tua takes them. They have so much talent on the offensive side of the ball. They're going to be able to put up 30-plus points a game. And it's going to come down to that defense as well. Could guys on that defensive side step up and make plays? You've seen some of the pass rushers they've drafted over the past couple of years. Come on, they had injuries last year. But, you know, I think it's a team that's kind of boom or bust when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. And they're really one injury away, you know, especially at the quarterback position, from kind of doing a free fall. But always, guys, okay, with both of the East teams, divisions, I should say, the NFC East and the AFC East, those divisions usually kind of beat up on each other, right? At the end of the season, you have the AFC East and the NFC East. You know, no one really kind of pulls away in those divisions. It gets late November and December, and those teams get in those division games and kind of beat up on each other. So I think the Dolphins, you know, are in that conversation with some of the upper echelon teams in the National Football League, but they got some big question marks, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, you just said something really interesting in terms of if Tua were to go down, it could go sideways really quick for the Miami Dolphins. And it feels like that's the team's worry about that or focus on that when they throw big money at quarterbacks like Tua, because the alternative is so much worse, right? They may not be a Super Bowl contending team with Tua. He might not be a Super Bowl contending quarterback. However, he's better than, you know, what the alternative might be, especially in the interim. Is that enough for you to want to throw the kind of money that he's going to demand at Tua, knowing that the alternative, especially in the short term, might be far worse than what he gives you?
See, I think the greatest example of that right now is the money that Trevor Lawrence got. I think Trevor Lawrence gets paid the money that he got paid because of, I think, a couple factors. Obviously, you're projecting that he's still going to mm-hmm. play like the top pick, and he's had flashes, and he's done some good things in the National Football League, but I don't think he's warranted the money that he got.
Right.
But on the flip side, can you afford to lose him? Can you afford to let him walk out the door and potentially go somewhere else and become the star that you thought he would be when you drafted him? And it's the same thing for the Dolphins. If you don't give Tua the money, you know for damn sure that someone else or a couple teams are going to line up and give him that money. So you're in that position where you say, all right, he's the guy, we drafted him, we have to stick by and put the best cast of characters around him and pay him. It's not obviously ideal, and I think that's why teams are maybe taking some shots at some guys and quarterbacks in the mid rounds to kind of bring in, and kind of develop, because you need that guy just in case you can't pay a guy. But in today's NFL, you almost have to, guys. I think the Dolphins are in a kind of no-win situation where if they don't pay Tua, he's going to probably walk and he goes somewhere else and he gets that money that he deserves. And then, you know, you're gonna roll with Mike White. You're going to roll with guys like that. You gotta really plan these things out. But these teams are really kind of strong arm right now by the quarterback position. I was kind of blown away by what, you know, Trevor Lawrence got paid and what the Jaguars had to do. And they came out and said all the right things that, you know, he's our guy and we believe in him. And hopefully it works out for them. But, you know, if you don't, there's teams staying alive. But the perfect situation, guys, is too, and Vinny, to your point about quarterback depth, is, you know, look at the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens have Lamar Jackson, two-time MVP. They have absolutely nothing behind Lamar Jackson, and they have nobody behind him as of right now. They can go out and sign a veteran tomorrow or trade for somebody, and this conversation is moot. But, you know, it's twofold. You got to pay these guys a boatload of money. If they go down, you know, your season kind of goes awry, and you know, but you have to have it. And I think that's why, you know, when we go back to the Raider conversation, you know, it's nice to have, you know, some of the stuff that we were talking about last week, to have a guy like Gardner Minshew there. You know, if I were a GM in this league and I had a proven starter like a Tua or like a, you know, Josh Allen or someone like that, I would love to have a Gardner Minshew, you know, behind him in case the worst happens, because, you know, at least he can go out there and win you a couple football games. There's a lot of situations in the National Football League where if the starter goes down, these teams are their season's over.
Yeah, we even saw that, how Miami had to get into the playoffs just 2 years ago, and they had to rely on Skylar Thompson. You know, and it didn't go anywhere, but the defense kept them in it, you know, and it's crazy to think, like, if you feel as an organization your window is open, you want to make sure you stack the deck at the most important position, and that's quarterback. And I agree with you, and we're speaking with Eddie Borsilli from SiriusXM Channel 156, Fight Nation. When you think about, though, a team like Miami that could not win the big games, 0-2 against Buffalo, 0-2 against the Chiefs, losses against the Ravens, losses against the Eagles, how much does that factor into what they're thinking about now with paying to a $50 million plus?
Yeah, and I think too, one signing to me on the defensive side of the ball is a guy like Calais Campbell. To me, maybe he's not going to, you know, win you football games at this stage of his career, but I think that's a kind of stabilizing force to say, hey, we have a really good offense. We're going to put points on the board. We need a veteran leader in there. Look, the Dolphins have a ton of playmakers on the defensive side of the ball too. If you look and you go roster by roster, guys, and you put the Dolphins roster up against a lot of teams in the National Football League, they're going to be one in a lot of different categories. Okay. But I think, you know, adding a guy like Calais Campbell on the defensive side, a leader like that, can go a long way to help some of the guys and say, hey, we're going to pay this quarterback a lot of money. Mm-hmm. We expect big numbers from him. But, hey, he could score 35 points a game, but if we give 38 up, you know, we're going to lose most days. So I think a guy, you know, signing a guy like Calais Campbell, Jordan Brooks coming over from Seattle, they have the weapons there. But it's a tough spot. Like, if we're being fair here and being honest, you know, would I pay Tua $50 million? No, I don't think you guys would either. But, again, it's just the nature of the beast and where we are as a society and as a league and a National Football League to say, okay, well, we saw what happened, to your point, Clay, about Skylar Thompson, guys coming in. We've seen it with the Raiders over the years. When Derek Carr gets hurt, you mm-hmm. put the backup in and just you can't get the job done. Mm-hmm. It's like you work and work and work all year for these opportunities, and one of these opportunities is going down. So you have to kind of bite the bullet and say, you know what? We drafted this guy. We're going to pay him. We're going to you know, do what we can do to kind of put the best players around him. And honestly, guys, the Dolphins really do have some of the at least big names on offense and defense on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I just don't like that thinking because I think eventually you find out, and I think the Raiders did with Derek Carr. You could put all, you know, there was a ceiling there, and in the biggest moments, kind of like with what the Dolphins were last year, in the biggest moments, they didn't get the job done, and he didn't get the job done. It was, you looked at the stats, you're like, oh my gosh, 4,000 yards passing and this and that. But how did he perform in big games against the Kansas City Chiefs, on the road in Kansas? You know what I'm saying? Like there was, you kind of knew that there was a ceiling there, and you're throwing championship money at a non-championship caliber quarterback. And that's the worry that I would have with Tua. And certainly in Jacksonville, I think they're kind of betting on Trevor Lawrence eventually being that number one pick guy. But there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And he hasn't shown anything yet that he's even close to being that. So I just reject throwing that kind of money at quarterbacks that in your heart, Eddie, you kind of know that aren't that quarterback.
But on the flip side of that too, Vinny, is you're going to throw you know, money like this, you know, money like that, and probably even more at a player like Lamar Jackson. And yes, two-time
MVP, too.
Great in the regular season, 2-4 in the postseason. He just is not a different player in the postseason and can't get it done. And I also think, you know, I know that the fans listening are probably not going to hear this. We are in the era of Patrick Mahomes here, and everyone's going to be compared to Patrick Mahomes almost unfairly because of how much success he's had, you know, how great he is and all the things he's done. And every quarterback in this era is going to be held up to him, and no one's going to come close, and, you know, unfair or not. But, you know, look at Josh Allen. Josh Allen in the playoffs has not had, you know, the success that he wanted.
His numbers are pretty good, though.
No, they are. They are, for
sure.
His
numbers are good. Lamar's are bad. His are good.
Lamar's are very bad. So, like, on the flip side is, okay, would you rather pay Lamar that type of money to get the MVP in the regular season, but, you know, when his career comes to an end, maybe he doesn't have that Super Bowl ring, and you're going to put him in that Dan Marino class to say he was an all-time great, but he never won, you know, never won the big game. So it's a difficult conversation. Yeah. Like I said, I just think these teams are in an unprecedented spot. You know, really what you're looking for is, you know, that mid-level guy that you draft, and I'm not going to use the Brady analogy because he's one in a million, but, you know, that mid-level guy that you draft and you develop and becomes a really good player, and you put the right supporting cast around him, because otherwise, you draft a quarterback in the top 10, you're gonna pay this money. Yeah, if you want to re-sign him, it's just the nature of the beast. Because, like I said before, if you don't, someone else will.
You know, conversely, I'm signing Brock Purdy if I'm the 49ers to a big contract.
Absolutely,
right?
Because you're not gonna. Yeah, absolutely. Because, like I said, to the same point,
he's proven it.
That guy he's proven it. You could say what you will about the supporting cast and all that kind of stuff, but he's absolutely gone out there and done what the organization has asked and more. And he's developed into, you know, the last pick in the NFL draft. You know, same thing as the Brady story. He's not there yet, obviously, but absolutely I'm playing Brock Purdy. Because, again, if you don't, what happens? It's the same thing. They drafted Trey Lance. Trey Lance fell on his face. They shipped him out. You put Brock Purdy in there, and you got to end up paying these guys. But it's just, you know, like I said, it's just where we are as a league. And, you know, I was looking at another stat the other day about running backs, and nobody reaches the 1,200, you know, yard mark anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just a different kind of culture that we live in, a different world that we live in. And unfortunately, in these teams, you kind of have to bite the bullet and just, you know, give the guy what they deserve.
Eddie Borsilli is on X at Borsilli. Follow him and like, because when you come on Wednesdays, you get me fired up, especially when I know that you're surrounded, you know, being and living in New York, that you're surrounded by Jets fans, you're surrounded by Giants fans, but also Bills fans. And when you think about upgrades in that division, did the Bills make a necessary upgrade from last year? Because they went through some turmoil where, like, Ken Dorsey falls on the sword, the offensive coordinator, but they also kind of went through a philosophical change because they move on from Stephon Diggs midway through the season, kind of like, let's get our tight ends to attack instead of always trying to go long to Stephon. Did they make the necessary upgrades to say that they are just as dangerous as they were last year?
It's a tricky question to answer. I would say when you get rid of a player like Stephon Diggs, let's take out maybe the off-the-field stuff and the antics that he has and all the kind of stuff and the relationship he had with Josh Allen. Stephon Diggs is maybe on a downside of his career, but still a tremendous football player.
Oh, yeah.
So did the receiving core get better? No, it did not. Maybe Keon Coleman, you know, develops into. I love him coming out of Florida State. I think he's going to be a good player. But on paper, I don't think their offense is. But I think the Bills are in a different spot. You know, Josh Allen is the entire offense. Whether you want to see him run, whether you want to see him play reckless, you know, Josh is a special, special football player. And I think they're putting, you know, the eggs in that basket to say, okay, Josh is our guy. Not that it's almost the same conversation with the Kansas City Chiefs. Hey, we have Patrick Mahomes, so we can let Tyreek Hill walk out the door and put another receiver in. Now, it didn't work out for a long time for the Chiefs. Yes, they still won, but the offensive production wasn't there. Mahomes had to do Mahomes stuff to get them where they need to be. So now they're kind of putting the eggs in the Josh Allen basket. Okay, we don't have Stephon Diggs and his 95 catches and 1,500 yards. You know, can you make Keon Coleman great? Can you make these tight ends better? Can we get the run game going? It's a lot more on the shoulders of Josh Allen to lead this football team and to be that guy. And I think he can. Like I said, we've seen him do magical stuff in the National Football League. But on paper, I say no. I do understand why you'd want to kind of change things up. Teams get in these ruts, guys, and you've seen it, where they're super talented.
Ooh, yeah.
And something's just not right. It's happening with the Yankees right now in Major League Baseball, where they have all the talent in the world. Something's just not right. You got to, like, shake it up. You got to move somebody out. You got to do something. I think that's kind of the Bills' philosophy. you know, kind of shipping Stephon Diggs out to say, hey, we need to kind of, you know, get different here. And I think on the defensive side, they still got a tremendous front seven. And Matt Milano back, who's a terrific linebacker. Okay. But, you know, guys like Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer were there for a long time, stalwarts on that side of defense. They have to replace those guys, even though Taylor Rapp did some work yesterday. So I think transition-wise, if I had a look on paper right now, I'd say the Bills are, you know, not as formidable as they were heading into last season. But I honestly trust Josh Allen. I trust his ability. I trust what he could do. He's one of those kind of unicorn-type football players that if I was going through the year, I'd bet on a guy like Josh Allen, you know, 9 times out of 10.
You know what that reminds me of, Eddie, and you could poke holes in this if you want. But it feels like a lot like the New Orleans Saints. Back in the day with Drew Brees. Yeah, there might have been some years where you had to step it back and rebuild around him because, you know, supporting casts get a little bit older and you just have to replenish. But they were okay with doing that because they felt like they have the quarterback, they have the head coach, they have that infrastructure in place to eventually get back to where they want to get back to. And I think it feels like a little bit of a transition year for the Bills. But they feel like they've got the right guy in place. And you look at the numbers of Josh Allen in the playoffs. He's been a good quarterback. They haven't gotten it done. There's been some crazy circumstances that have resulted in that. But do you feel comfortable that eventually it's probably going to happen with Josh Allen and the Bills?
Yeah, I do. And I'm actually happy that they, you know, because, guys, honestly, they probably could have, you know, fired the head coach last year. And everyone was like, okay, yeah, it was the head coach's fault. Let's get somebody else in there and get turned a page on this. Same kind of concept, right? Shake things up. We need new direction. But I'm glad they kept this core. And we've seen so many times in the National Football League, GMs get fired, coaches get fired. You know, see it through. Like, you have the quarterback, you draft the quarterback, you develop, you did this. Brandon Bean's a terrific GM. Mm-hmm. They're not afraid to make moves. And to that point also, you know, Brandon Bean's struck a lot of deals. So, they're not – going into the year, maybe the roster's not great. Who's to say they're not, you know, in first place at the trade deadline? They go out and take a swing for a big receiver or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like IFRS. So, but yeah, it's kind of like with Drew Brees, and the Saints have been playing, you know, cap roulette for the better part of 20 years rolling around. But you just kind of plug and play. You got the one guy in there that you trust. And you know, the whole conversation we have every week, that's the most important position in the National Football League. So if I had a Josh Allen on my team, I could suck that up and say, all right, let's get Stephon Diggs out of here and see how these young guys kind of grow with Josh Allen, and maybe we could find Keon Coleman fills that void a little bit and becomes a star player. So it affords you those opportunities because you're not looking for that guy, because that guy at the quarterback position is not out there. He's not, you know, there's no Josh Allen's in free agency. You're not going to go out there and find this guy that drafts over and now the season is on the horizon. So you have that in place, you feel good about it, and then you could always go out there and add and get players. Same thing the Saints did back in the day, go out there and maybe add a piece or two. So I think the Bills are always going to be in that conversation. I don't expect them to come out now without some of the, you know, people they lost and all of a sudden become a four-win football team. They're too talented. The quarterback's too talented. So they're going to be right up there as well.
Eddie Borsilli here with us on Raider Nation Radio. Then finally, I guess just the overall sentiment of the aspirations that we were at last year at this time about how the Jets were a Super Bowl team. Could you think of a balloon deflating any faster than what that was as they ended up with 7 wins last year? Do you think they made any upgrades that will make the difference, or is it still just hinge on one guy?
It hinges on one guy, but at least they went out and got Tyrod Taylor to kind of hedge their bets a little bit.
That's all they need.
I know. Well, last year obviously was the most, you know, kind of unfortunate thing, and the most Jet thing I've ever seen in my entire life. You know, this team is—you could sit here, and the Mets and the Jets are in the same boat, and the black cloud following these teams everywhere they go, and it really was kind of harmfully poetic that happened. But it really does. You know, the Jets, look, if we're all jokes aside here, the Jets defense is elite. They have an elite unit on defense. They have speed everywhere. Quincy Williams is one of the best, most underrated players in the National Football League. They have Quinnen Williams. They have, you know, maybe Hassan Reddick's going to be there, but they have a terrific defense, you know, that gets after it. And they have the skill position guys. We saw it last year when Garrett Wilson making plays, you know, with backup quarterbacks. Breece Hall, they have so much young talent on offense that it's going to come down to the quarterback. It's going to come down to how Aaron is and how Aaron can come back and how confident he is in his ability, you know, not throwing the football. We all know he could do that, but taking hits, you know, that first hit that Aaron Rodgers, everyone's going to hold their breath and say, oh my God, you know, it's going to happen all over again. Or if he stays down for an extended period of time, it all hinges on him, guys.
If he stays healthy, does he give you the four wins that you need? The four wins will get them to what, 11? That'll get them in the playoffs. Do you think he is?
I think he is too. I mean, look, he is the best pure throw of the football that I've ever seen when it comes to just pure arm talent and things that he does on the football field. I know he's up there in age. I know he's, you know, all the stuff coming off injuries. I bet on a guy like Aaron Rodgers because once he's out there, you know, he's smart. He can still make every throw. So, yeah, when it comes down to it, I think he can account for the three or four wins. But here's the thing that I said earlier, guys. You have a healthy Aaron Rodgers for the season. The Jets are up there, the Dolphins, the Bills. It all, you know, they can't all have 12, 13 wins mm-hmm. here. That's what I mean. Like, they're going to end up beating on each other in the division, and maybe the cream rises to the top. So I did look forward to last year seeing what Aaron Rodgers could do, kind of breath of fresh air, tell him to keep Devontae's name out of his head and leave him alone for the season. But I'm excited for what he could do. But, you know, I do live here. I do hear the airwaves. The Jets fans, you know, always see the worst coming. So hopefully they can get some one season of Aaron Rodgers and we could all enjoy the final maybe year or two left in his career.
Oh, the humanity. I love it. Eddie Borsilli here with us, SiriusXM Channel 156 Fight Nation. Thank you, Eddie, for your time. Great stuff. Let's do it again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Have a great week.
Thank you so much. At Borsilli on X. Great stuff from Eddie Borsilli. In fact, we'll continue on our conversation about the AFC East with Miami Dolphins writer Travis Wingfield. He's also a host and podcaster with the Miami Dolphins Radio Network. We'll talk to him coming up next. We'll ask him about the upgrades and about the storylines that go into their camp in Miami.
Looking forward to that. Love talking about the hottest new tequila brand in Las Vegas. And of course, we're talking about Dos Catas Tequila, the official tequila of the Las Vegas Aces. And boy, they are on a roll right now. You know, if you're here in Las Vegas and you want to do some shopping and go get some Dos Catas Tequila, whether it's for yourself or as a gift for somebody else, Total Wines and Lee's Liquors carries all of Dos Catas's, you know, brands. Also, if you want to go, if you're into cigars, La Casa Cigar and Lounge over at Tivoli Village. Our good friend Mike Prieto has teamed up with Dos Catas Tequila's Les Cacahuna, and what they've done is they've paired up some of Mike's great specialty cigars with the various labels of Dos Catas Tequila, so you get this perfect combination of great tequila with a splendid cigar in a wonderful atmosphere over at La Casa Cigar and Lounge at Tivoli Village. And if you're not here in Las Vegas, don't worry. Go to doscatasspirits.com. You can make all your Dos Catas tequila orders online, get them shipped wherever you are. Just go to doscatasspirits.com for all the details.
And it's Miami football with 22 seconds to go. He was trying to find Trey Tucker between a pair of defenders, and Jalen Ramsey leaped up and picked off the pass, and now he's down in the end zone as well.
Raiders Radio Network coming back from that final call between the Raiders and the Dolphins November 19th of last year. We're back here on Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. Vinny, Bonsignor, Clay Baker, and you, thanks for being with us. And keep listening, because in about 15 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win tickets for the big Battle for Vegas charity softball game this Saturday over at the Las Vegas ballpark between the Golden Knights and the Raiders with team captain AJ Cole. Travis Wingfield joins us now. He's the host of the Drive Time podcast, part of the Dolphins podcast network. He's also a writer at MiamiDolphins.com. Fantastic writer, fantastic host, and we're really happy to have you with us today, Travis. Thank you for being with us, because we're going around the league and we're trying to figure out about teams from the AFC East as well as those on the Raiders schedule, and to ask if they upgraded from this point from last year. And how do you feel so far as the offseason has gone for the Miami Dolphins about the upgrades they've had to make because they had notable deletions from this roster?
Yeah, you go into the offseason with expectations for how it might go in terms of losses versus gains. And Miami really kind of overhauled their roster and did it in a way that kind of kept them flexible for the future mm-hmm. by kind of utilizing this, you know, one-year contract in vogue type of approach that teams seem to have these days. And their defense is just littered with players that fit that criteria, with Calais Campbell, with Kendall Fuller got multiple years, but a lot of void years in the back end of that deal. A guy like Marcus May, Jordan Brooks got a big contract, Anthony Walker. So they went and got guys that I think better suit what Anthony Weaver wants to do. The new defensive coordinator is in terms of his system, you know, coming down from the Ravens and kind of incorporating some of that, you know, simplified rush games and defensive back heavy packages compared to Vic Fangio, who kind of presented a static, you know, pre-snap presentation that was more based upon, you know, playing with better rushers and more guys up in the box. And then offensively, I think it's kind of a nod to what the Dolphins view in terms of what's the most important part of the program. And for them, it's quarterback play and skill players. And they really went hard after, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., Malik Washington, Taj Washington in the draft, getting Jonnu Smith, trading up for Jalen Wright. So they have a bunch more explosive players on offense, which is saying a lot compared to what they had previously. And they kind of did that at the expense of the offensive line, as Robert Hunt and Connor Williams both depart in free agency. They went out and got Jack Driscoll and drafted a tackle who probably doesn't play this year in Patrick Paul. So I think the offensive line kind of took a hit. Maybe the defense took a bit of a hit as well. But, man, you look at the skill group in Miami, I don't think there's a better one in the entire National Football League right now.
What's been the issue in big moments for Tua and the Dolphins, whether it's, you know, against teams in their division that they've had trouble with, the Kansas City Chiefs, they're 0-2. They went on the road last year in the playoffs, and it was just a really bad performance. But what do you think the problem has been in those bigger moment games that the Dolphins just haven't delivered?
I think you touched on it with just the aspect of being on the road, because you look at all their big games last year, except for the Dallas game and then the Buffalo game at home, which they went 1-1 and had a chance to win that Buffalo game there late and just came up short. I think it's this heavy verbiage offense that requires lots of pre-snap movement and motions and communication and trying to get that communicated within the 40-second play clock in 2 years of Mike McDaniel has proven to be an issue so far. And that's got to be probably the main emphasis this offseason, because it's a lot of continuity. I mentioned the additions they made, but it's Tua, it's Reek, it's Waddle, you know, it's Tron Armstead, Austin Jackson. A lot of the guys are back. McDaniel, Frank Smith, Wes Welker, the entire coaching staff is all the same. So you hope that in year three, it's a little more streamlined. Can you get to the line of scrimmage 5 seconds quicker? Can you get your motions out 5 seconds quicker and get the snaps off? Because there are so many critical penalties this offense had last year that wiped out, I mean, the number one offense in the league, right? And they still had big plays wiped out because they couldn't get lined up, or they couldn't, you know, they were late to the snap and they ended up holding because somebody beat the offensive tackle off the line in the pass rush. So I think just getting things communicated earlier in the huddle would go a long way towards trying to find a way to win those games on the road.
We're speaking with Travis Wingfield here on Raider Nation Radio. You can follow him on X at Wingfield NFL. When you think about those final games of the season, you know, the two losses to the Ravens and the Bills in the regular season, but the Kansas City game, what do you think was the biggest problem with the Kansas City game other than the weather? What do you think held them back? Because it felt like they wanted to get away from the run game when it still was totally in play in the second half.
Yeah, and that Buffalo game, too, they were running the ball very well in the first half and kind of got away from it down the stretch, and the offense couldn't score after that. But, you know, this is kind of a cop-out, I think, and I wasn't there, but I have friends that work here in the building that were there, and they were like, Travis, you have no idea how cold it was that night. Mm-hmm. And our blood in South Florida is pretty thin, so to go into a negative 25 real steel game is that's an actual, real, tangible impact.
Okay, fair enough, yeah, I believe that. You're living here in Vegas, I can see that big time.
And right, you guys are dealing with the heat right now, too. But on top of that, I mean, and this was kind of a factor down the stretch. It really began in that Titans game when Tyreek Hill went down and he missed the following week against the Jets and came back and wasn't really the same the rest of the way. Yeah. And then Waddle had an even more serious ankle injury that happened on Christmas, even that Cowboys game. He missed the Ravens and Buffalo game, and he came back for KC, but you could tell he wasn't all the way back. And I think that the absence of so many critical parts, because Armstead almost never practices, Connor Williams had been out, Rob Hunt had missed a bunch of games, Austin Jackson was in and out of the lineup, the left guard was a guy that was consistently turning over throughout the course of the season. I think it was the lack of practice reps together as an offense over the final month of the season. And you talk about the communication issue we talked about in the previous question. I think all of that compounded for the offense to kind of become a shell of itself and really, you know, reduce from the production it had previously. So it's kind of a lot of things that kind of came into one, and then you face a really, really good Chiefs defense and the weather. It was just a perfect storm of a problem they created themselves by losing, you know, three of the last five games.
All right, so what do you think the end game is here with Tua and his contract? I contend that if I'm the Miami Dolphins, I want to see it one more year before I throw the major money that is likely coming his way, whether it's from the Dolphins or somebody else. That's what I would do. Is that the path that the Dolphins are on? I know that that probably doesn't sit well with Tua. Maybe it's not. Maybe they get something done. What do you feel is the end game in that situation?
Yeah, I can see that perspective, but I would be very surprised if we get to camp and he's not locked up long term. I think it's in the works. I think there's progress. I think that he's, you know, this entire offense, and you know, you can point out to his deficiencies or where he has shortcomings in the physical skill sets and all that stuff. But this offense is tailor-made for what he does really well and getting the ball out fast and kind of reading out the defense before the snap and putting it into a spot where, you know, his receiver comes out of the break and makes the catch right off the break and it can maximize his ability to run after the catch. He's so sharp. And we talked about offensive line issues. I mean, this was an offensive line that was so banged up and allowed so many pressures and quick pressures, and yet he had a top five sack percentage allowed. So he does a great job of not just maximizing the skill sets on the outside, but kind of mitigating some issues you have in protection that this offensive line has dealt with really his entire career so far. So I think that this offense, I mean, we saw it 2 years ago with Teddy Bridgewater and Skylar Thompson. They couldn't move the football right. About two in the game. I think he's just such a critical element of this offense, the point guard of it all. And if you let him go, you're back in the purgatory this franchise was in for, you know, 15 years of you know, Chad Henne and John Beck and Cleo Lemon and Dante Culpepper. Like, we don't want to go back to that. So I think he'll get a deal done here sooner than later.
Mike McDaniel, you brought it up about, you know, the so much verbiage and so much results on timing and the communication issues that were maybe having a problem last year. Do you think they've fixed that? Do you think they streamlined things, or at least there's an ability for Mike McDaniel to have the communication process the way he needs it, and also Tua able to receive it, but also with an offensive line that is going through some turmoil as well with new faces? How do you think that may have been upgraded and streamlined, or do you expect perhaps a little bit of growing pains to begin the year?
Yeah, I think just knowing Coach McDaniel and his process, and kind of, you know, every coach in this league, and rightfully so, because these guys know so much thing football, like, they have an ego, right? But I think that McDaniel is one of the best in terms of checking the ego at the door. Cool. And trying to figure out what his shortcomings were to improve upon those. And so I can't, like, tangibly say, yes, it'll be better. But just knowing him and his process, I imagine it's something that he's really harped on this offseason. And I think you see that through the additions they made on offense. Because you go back to, like, down the stretch last year, when I talked about Waddle or Hill missing games, there were so many instances where, like, Buffalo, for instance, would just widen the safeties, take away the vertical threat, and take away the underneath stuff to both Waddle and Tyreek, or either or. And then it was incumbent upon Cedric Wilson or Chase Claypool or Braxton Berrios or Durham Smythe to uncover one-on-one with no help, like just a wide-open, vast space of grass, and they couldn't uncover. And that was a big detriment to the offense. And so you go out and you get Odell Beckham, who can beat one-on-one coverage, Jonnu Smith, who can do the same thing and spot up and, you know, pile up yards after the catch. I think Devon Achane will have an increased role in the passing game this year. I think when you look at their ability to have the foresight for where things went wrong last year from the personnel standpoint, I have to imagine the communication and kind of the operation has to be a critical part of that as well. So I would be very surprised if they have the same issue again. But if they do, then it's officially a thing, right?
Yeah, and looking at the division on a whole, and we've been doing this exercise this week, did they get better or did they not? When you look at, I think, the New England Patriots, probably set them aside. They feel like a team that's in a major transition right now. The Patriots and the Jets, or excuse me, the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets, I think just by getting Aaron Rodgers back, the Jets are improved. Not quite sure about the Buffalo Bills, but your thoughts on those two teams in terms of how that division has stayed pat, improved, or gotten worse?
Yeah, I think that the demise of the Buffalo Bills is much exaggerated, mm-hmm. because that quarterback is freaking Superman.
Yep.
And I've been going through my own offseason preview content. I just keep going back to the numbers and the tape and how we in Miami have such issues getting him to the ground or preventing him from going off with, you know, these career-level days. He's just so dang good and so dang tough to defend that I think that he can get production out of that offense entirely on his own. It's Mahomes and Josh Allen and a big gap to the rest of the NFL in terms of the quarterbacks. Yeah, they did have a lot of personnel change, like you mentioned. They kind of had the cap casualties, kind of having to take their medicine this year, and losing Stephon Diggs is always going to hurt. I think they have a reduction of skill players on the outside. We'll see about Keon Coleman. I mean, he was a guy that didn't really separate a whole lot in college, and can't separate in college. I don't think you can separate in the National Football League, but I digress on that. Defensively, I think they'll probably be better because they get Matt Milano back in the middle of that defense. But they do lose, you know, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. So just a lot, like you said, a lot of overhaul there with Buffalo. But I go back to the quarterback, and he doesn't get hurt. He plays every game. He's a stud, and he's going to make them a playoff team every year. For the Jets, I share your sentiment with how they've improved their roster, and it's like, it's the most all-in team I've ever seen in my life with, you know, Tyron Smith and Mike Williams and a 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles. It looks good on paper, but I continue to question how they support this quarterback who is, you know, for lack of a better term, completely full of himself. And he contradicts himself with, we got to cut the BS out. Like, dude, you are the BS. Like, you're creating all this BS for your team. And I think that they kind of bend the knee for this guy. Like, Nathaniel Hackett is not a qualified offensive coordinator anymore. He never has been. Like, what does he do there? I don't know. You bring him back because it appeases Rodgers, and I don't know. I don't really have a lot of faith. I think there's like an intangible there that could derail them, like it seems to always do to the New York Jets. But yeah, on paper, you can say they probably have maybe the best roster in the entire division.
I love it. You know, I tell you what, Travis, it's really great to have you on. Thank you for coming on today. Great host, great writer with MiamiDolphins.com. We look forward to talking again soon. And perhaps when the season gets started, let's do it again.
Yeah, great stuff. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Follow him at Wingfield NFL on X. And, you know, thinking about the Jets, for one thing, the Miami Dolphins and Jets don't face each other until December 8th. I wonder what kind of team the Jets will be by then.
Yeah, and vice versa as well. I try to refrain from betting against Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it's
the BS, all of that. I didn't like that he didn't do mini camp this year, but apparently it was all good with the team itself. So or at least they say it was, and it got arranged and everything like that. It's probably not going to matter much in the whole scheme of things, but I just feel like he's a quarterback that understood what was kind of wasted last year for him, unfortunately, because of the injury. It was just an opportunity late in his career to potentially do something special. And I would imagine that he's chapping at the bit to get back out there. He does, I believe, have talent around him. They've got a great defense. He's worked with Hackett before, and I think we all kind of get it that he operates things at the line of scrimmage. So that's not going to change. It's an offense that he's comfortable with, and an offensive coordinator that he's worked with before. And I think Hackett understands what his role is with an Aaron Rodgers as quarterback. So for all the reasons that we want to say or poof at Aaron Rodgers, there's so much production and so much talent there, and so many times of him proving people wrong that it's hard to bet against them.
It's hard. I wouldn't want to do it. And that's the great mystery of this division with the AFC East. Like, if he remains healthy, then your preseason predictions, and everyone has them as like another 7-win team.
I don't see how.
They could be.
They were a 7-team win without him.
Yeah, they could be seriously more dangerous this year. And he's right. And Travis was like, they're all in.
They should be.
They have stacked the deck with veteran presences.
What else would you be doing with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback?
This is what you do. This is how you have to. You have no other way to go.
It's not like they don't have all these guys signed to 8-year contracts or anything like that, or 4-year contracts. It's for the right now. And when you have somebody at Aaron Rodgers, especially at his age, and that window is closing fast, and you missed one rung of that window last year, yes, absolutely. The goal is to put as much talent around him as possible right now to try to maximize this window, and he's the kind of quarterback that can cash that investment in. So it'll be interesting and quite honestly fascinating. They and the Chicago Bears are the two teams that I kind of have my eye on to make massive turnarounds this year.
All right, let's get into more of that on the other side.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Great news to hear that about UNLV getting the Mountain West preseason rankings at number 2 with 6 guys mentioned for All Mountain West. That's fantastic. I tell you, that tells you something what one guy can do in 1 year. Barry Odom has not only done that to get wins in a program that normally doesn't see 6 wins a year, but getting the talent out to Las Vegas has been awesome. And Barry Odom doing great work in a short amount of time. getting a chance to maybe see the UNLV football program get its first back-to-back winning seasons in program history. It could be a reality. From the text line, 702-365-9200. We'll also be joined by Marcus Johnson in a few minutes from Tape Don't Lie. Robin Oakland makes an interesting point. He says only about a quarter of the league has a true Super Bowl caliber playmaking quarterback. And with quarterback contracts demanding more guaranteed money, whether by cash or by cap, overpaying a second or third tier quarterback leaves such fewer resources to build a team that can make up for a quarterback's deficiencies just to win a Super Bowl. So three quarters of the league may be more successful building defenses to harass and damage quarterbacks rather than overpaying for a quarterback that is ranked in the 9th through 24 range. Thanks, Rob, in that regard. That's the dilemma. That's what every team is trying to figure out. How can we find somebody that's, you know, beyond the 9 and 24 rankings of quarterbacks? Can you find somebody that is, you know, not only efficient and can win you games, but is also affordable? That's the great mystery here.
Yeah. I think that when you look at Patrick Mahomes, obviously, I think Josh Allen, his problem in a couple of the biggest games were against, Patrick Mahomes. And, that's tough because, you take Patrick out of the equation. I think Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills would have been to a Super Bowl by now for sure. So, but other than that, you know, when you look at the, when you look at the quarterbacks around the league, who do you feel comfortably, in the right situation, they can lead you to a Super Bowl or help you win a Super Bowl. And we could go down that path if you want. I think that obviously Matthew Stafford has shown that he could do it. I think Brock Purdy can. They were close to beating the Chiefs last year. So believe he's capable of doing it. Josh Allen, obviously Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow without question. I think Jared Goff in the right situation, he's shown that he could get a team to a Super Bowl. He did that with the Rams. I think they probably should have won that game last year. He didn't drop those two key passes, that didn't extend drives. And had they extended those drives, they probably beat the 49ers on that day. I do believe Dak Prescott is capable of being that quarterback. Who am I missing?
I mean,
do you have anyone that you want to chime in there?
No, but I'm thinking of like how there is like a notable chasm of quarterbacks available in
Justin
this year's
Herbert?
Draft that you are willing to go and hold on to a guy that might be mid-tier and you hope that has the potential to be a top seven quarterback, but you will overpay for him because
Such
you don't
as,
see
who are we talking about?
You don't see anything coming up in the future.
Yeah, who are we talking about?
Like in the case for Miami, like if Tua. It's like, who else is going to be coming up in the draft that makes you feel like, well, that's your next equivalent that we could find?
Yeah.
So we're going to pay you, even though we know that there are some deficiencies here.
Yeah, and they haven't made that decision yet. It sounds like they probably will, but, all right, Tua, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's capable, of being that guy.
That's funny. Herbert. If you feel like, I don't know. If that comes up, then it's like, then he's not the right guy.
Probably, yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with Marcus Johnson in 90 seconds time. He's here on Raider Nation Radio.